to stay, for it was I who chose to start. I see no need to take me home. I'm old enough to face the
Welcome back to episode 29 of Yelling About Comics. That's 29, the number that comes after 28. Look at this. We are three or four, like where we got it every 2 weeks, because we are awesome.
We're finally awesome.
Okay, look, we've always been awesome, but now we're like punctually awesome.
There we go. Yes.
Habitually awesome. I like that one better. As always, I'm your host, Jen Bozier, and I am joined with my lovely co-host, Carrie Honey.
Hello, everybody.
And this evening, so tonight, we have kind of a strange, well, not strange, but just kind of an out there conversation that was birthed entirely from me surfing around on the internet one night and looking around at various things, and you know how, like, you start, like, I want to find a good recipe for chocolate cake. And then the next thing you do, you're looking at, like, what was the greatest episode of the Justice League cartoon series? I don't remember. Just, you know, like one of those rabbit holes you go down. And I came across this scene, actually from Batman Beyond, and I was like, oh, man, that was, like, one of my favorite scenes in all of history about Batman. And so we started talking about this, and so thus the idea for tonight was born about what are our favorite cinematics. This is like movies, TV, cartoons, basically anything that's ever graced a screen, moments for comic book characters. Because throughout the entire, again, TV, cartoon, and movie universe, there have been these scenes that I think we agree just kind of encapsulate that essence of that character. It's not like, sometimes it can be an entire episode, but sometimes it's just like, just a quick little line of dialogue where you're like, yes, that right there was written, somebody understood this character.
Or, I guess, someone understood how I interpret this character.
And well, that could be, yes. Yeah. Someone interprets the character the same way that I interpreted this character. That just, you know, things that make you go, oh, yes, that exactly. So, I'll start off by saying the scene that I was particularly thinking about was from an episode of Batman Beyond. Oddly enough, in which there's this episode in which somebody is trying to make Bruce think that he's crazy and that he's hearing voices, and at the end of the episode, he and Terry are talking, and Terry's like, you know, how did you know that you weren't, that those voices weren't actually you? And old man Bruce is like, well, for one thing, I know I'm not crazy. And he's like, and for a second thing, the voice in my head kept calling me Bruce, and that's not how I think of myself. And, of course, Terry's just like, but I'm Batman now. And, you know, Batman's like, no, I'll always be Batman. But it's like this two-sentence exchange, and I thought it was amazing. Just this perfect, perfect little representation of him being like, I don't think of myself as Bruce. In his mind, which I guess
it's
in some ways...
It's kind of sad, too.
It's really sad, right? But I think that's why I liked it so much, because I was like, oh, man, like, that's the tragedy of Batman right there, right? Is that kind of like Superman, where Superman is Superman, but Clark Kent is his ego, alter ego.
Mm-hmm.
Batman's alter ego is Bruce Wayne. And I thought that was so sad
when,
in that moment.
And it's really the other way around. But yeah,
well,
but
like,
it is.
But
like
mentally.
Yes, right, right.
He thinks of himself, which I was just like, oh man, like, can you imagine, like, can you imagine being in a spot where your actual identity, you think of it as your alter ego, right? You're dressed up as a bat. That's your real you. It was one of those scenes that I was like, man, like, Batman Beyond had a lot of hit or miss things. But it wasn't as good as the animated series, obviously, even though it attempted to try to go down that road. But that moment, I remember watching it thinking, wow, okay, whoever wrote this definitely has the same interpretation of this character as I do.
Now, I think it was a Paul Dini, wasn't it?
I don't remember who wrote that episode. I don't know if he wrote that episode.
Well, I think that Batman Beyond was one of his productions, though, for sure.
Yes. Oh, no, it was. It was. But I don't know who actually wrote that episode, but that I was, oh man.
You know, I didn't really watch, I hadn't watched like, you know, all of Batman Beyond, but I watched it, you know, when it was on, when I was in college, I think. Mm-hmm. And one thing I'll say about Batman Beyond is, like, you're right, it was very hit or miss, but one thing I really liked about it was that they picked a character to be Batman, Terry McGinnis, that was nothing like Bruce Wayne.
Yes.
And he really kept his own identity all through that. And
he did.
And which I really appreciated, because we don't need another Bruce Wayne. We don't need another Dick Grayson. It was great that Terry was Terry. Probably my favorite line from that was Terry was having issues, you know, balancing being Batman and his personal life, especially with his girlfriend. And so he asked Bruce when he's out on a mission, you know, because Bruce is talking in his ear, and he's like, I don't know what to do about this. Do you have any advice? He goes, you're asking me for advice about women? And like, that to me was one of those, like, yeah, that's right? So valid.
It's always nice to know how much insight he has into himself.
Mm-hmm.
But that was one of those ones that I always keep, and I'm like, oh man, yeah, that was particularly good. I liked that one. What's one that you have?
Okay, well, I guess I'll start with one we kind of talked about earlier. It's from Justice League, the cartoon show. Mm-hmm. And probably one of my favorite episodes in that whole both seasons is when the minds of Flash and Lex Luthor get swapped. So they kind of have a Freaky Friday.
Yes.
And
I love that episode.
Yeah, it's just one of the best episodes. And so here you have, like, this totally, like, overly serious, like, angry, domineering villain. Now in the body of, like, the happiest, most-go-lucky character in the Justice League. And the same thing with the Flash. And, of course, he's panicking because he's like, oh, my God, I have to be, like, mean and they can't find out who I am because they're going to kill me. You know, whereas, you know, Lex is the totally opposite approach. So, you know, Flash is a little more panicky. And there's this wonderful scene where he says, where they're all wondering what's wrong with them, and I guess Lex Luthor's concubine, whatever of the flavor of the month, I guess.
Right.
She's like, oh, you must need to lay down. He's like, yes, I do need to lay down. I just need to take a minute. And she said, and so she's like, well, like, I'm going to come in with you. I need to help you relax. And they shut the door, and he says, very muffled, well, that's not relaxing. And right there, that to me is, you know, that's Flash right there. Just.
It really is.
When he's trying to be super serious, he just can't.
The whole episode was just, it was so great, because you have these two characters who are basically the antithesis of one another, right? And this had nothing to do with the character, but we were just talking about this before there, that where I was like, one of the things I absolutely love, right, is that Lex, being very smart, realizing that he's in a superhero's body, he's like, oh, okay.
Uh-oh, Jen, your mic cut out. Well, I hope Jen can hear me, because her mic has cut out here for a second. But I don't want to talk over, because I know what she was going to talk about, but I don't want to talk over her. So she just pained me. Just says WTF. So I guess I'll go on ahead and do another one, because I just don't want to, you know, say what she was going to say. So I guess my other one that I have is she back?
I think I am, yes.
Okay.
Hi, there we go.
Cool.
Hi, Dan. So, sorry about that.
No, it's fine.
So the scene that I love is that Lex, being very clever, being in a superhero's body, he's like, I'm going to figure out who this is. And I love that he takes off Flash's mask, and he's like, I have no idea who this is. I absolutely loved it, because in some ways it really, I mean, it spoke to Lex Luthor's character, right? Because on one hand you have poor innocent Wally West, well, that's not very relaxing, right? And Lex Luthor's like, okay, how can I use this to my advantage? Like, you can see him just calculating and scheming, and it was just such a silly, funny moment. I loved that show.
Yeah, he's like, he has no idea who Barry Allen is.
Just none. But that show in general, I would say that show is probably my favorite version of The Flash ever. Because it is, he's just that real, like, kind of goofy, happy, positive guy, right? That every now and then he can be serious when he needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
But they really got that pure essence of him, right?
Yes.
Which, I guess when you juxtapose that against, say, the CW Flash.
Let's not go there.
Let's not at all. Let's just not.
Well, all I'm going to say is that the first season of CW's Flash was the Flash. And then they CW'd him. So anyway.
Yeah, just brood all the time. Brood, brood, brood. Broody, brood, brood. Yeah, exactly. That kind of crap. Which, so, oh man. We'll bridge over to another competing network that's not the CW. I know, crazy. The show, the Constantine show.
Okay.
So, oh my God.
That was NBC, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it was. Channel 9 here. So, I absolutely loved that show. Matt Ryan was John Constantine. Like, I mean, he talked like him, he looked like him, he was. And he took it so seriously. And then writing that show, they did such a good job of staying loyal to that character. And they borrowed heavily from the comics, so obviously, right, they were going to do what they were supposed to do with the character and be loyal and true to him. But one of my favorite Constantine comics is from the olden days. He has this friend named Gary Lester, who is a drug addict and a fledgling exorcist, and he finds a guy who's been possessed by a demon. He exorcises him, not understanding that the guy wasn't possessed. He was being used as a prison for the demon. And so Constantine tricks Lester into basically being the prison, because Constantine decides that this guy is a waste of humanity anyways. He's a drug addict. Like, you know, he's got nothing going for him. So I'm just going to trick him and use him as a prison. And at the last minute, you know, Gary figures out what he's doing. And he's like, you know, okay, that's fine. I understand. I will willingly allow you to do this to me. And the thing that I loved about it for the show is that I was like, oh man, there's no way that they're going to go through with this. They softened it a little bit, mm-hmm. and they did so in the nicest way. He totally imprisons his friend. Totally. And it's with a hunger demon. So the hunger demon will basically, if let go, it'll just eat everything in sight, right? And gorge itself. But if it's trapped inside of a person, it'll just slowly but surely eat that person from the inside out and then just go back to hell.
Oh.
Yeah, it's pretty dark. So he condemns his friend to this fate, but then they show him sitting there with his friend as his friend slowly is killed by this demon. And I loved it because it showed the wild, wild gambit of Constantine's emotions, that he is very callous and very much a greater good, breaking eggs to make an omelet type of guy, but somewhere deep down in him is this very he cares about other people.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't really admit it or show it, but somewhere deep down, he does care. And it was just this lump of sugar moment that I was like, oh man, that was incredible. And I just, yeah, I loved it because I was surprised that they didn't shy away from a super dark thing, and again, they softened his character without having him, like, crying over a beer, like, what have I done? They just, you know, he just sat with his friend. So, I always, and that, God, that show start to finish, I'm still so pissed off that they canceled it.
Killing Sounds like balls. It was better than Gotham.
Well, shit, that's not saying a whole lot now.
No, it's really not. That show had potential.
It had a lot of potential.
And then they brought in Kat.
Do we even need to talk about Kat?
No. But that's where the show went wrong, is when they decided to bring in, you know, young Bruce and Kat. And like, no. This is supposed to be about Gotham.
Yeah, they pitched a show that they were like, oh, it's going to be what Gotham was like before Batman. And then they were like, but we're going to just shove in every... so that you know that the show's about Batman. The whole time. Really, guys? Come on. Yeah, that one was disappointing.
Very much so.
So what else you got?
Alright, so... you know, when we were coming up with this topic, like, it took me a while to really just kind of sit down and just, you know, think about different things that I've seen. And, you know, one thing that always just triggers my mind is a scene from a wonderful cartoon called Young Justice.
Oh, okay.
It was the second season, and this is after Arsenal, the original Roy Harper, has now been woken from being frozen, and he's kind of mad, has some anger issues. Oh man, probably one of my favorite lines in there was actually right when he woke up, and he's like, so let me get this straight. I've been missing for like the last like 6 years. You're replaced by a clone. No one figured out that wasn't me, and Ollie got some weird goatee. And Green Light, and so the Green Arrow just goes, you like the goatee? That's all he took from that. which actually is, to think about, that's actually really Green Arrow of him before the current Green Arrow. But at the time, that was like very, very Green Arrow of him. But it's that same episode when Toys decides to go by Arsenal, and he's really mad at Lex Luthor, so he's going to go take him out. And he, you know, blows up part of the building where Lex is, and Mercy is trying to get him to leave. Mm-hmm. No. I'm sorry. I'm getting way ahead of myself. So he's at his desk, and he's like, I don't know, maybe, I don't remember what he's doing. He's doing something. But anyway, so Arsenal launches basically a rocket launcher into him. And so you know, right before commercial, there's this smoking, gaping hole, and it comes back, and you see Lex behind the desk, and he's pulling at Mercy, and he goes so nonchalantly, and that is why I spent $2 million on a desk. It was just right there. I was like, you know, that is so Lex. And Lex's character has kind of gone back and forth over the years, where he is like this totally angry, domineering villain who's just mad all the time. And then there's the times when he is just this cocky SOB who just, nothing phases him. And that moment right there is like, that's Lex. Just nothing phases him. Yes, someone just did a rocket launcher at him, but you know what? That's why he had this very fancy desk.
Basically.
Yeah, just...
I liked their treatment of him.
Yes.
Very much.
Because it came more as this super smart villain. He was always playing his cards 5 moves ahead of everybody.
Yes.
And in ways that the audience didn't see coming. Because he would say things like...
I would agree.
And like, he would say things like, oh, okay, he's on top of this, but you don't know how on top of it he really is. Yeah.
Yes, definitely agreed. Actually, so, okay, God, more with the Justice League cartoon. There is, you know...
because it was an amazing cartoon.
It really was. Justice League was amazing. Justice League Unlimited was very good, and Young Justice is very good as well. I cannot point... like, I racked my brain for the Justice League cartoon. I was like, what is a single... like, just a single point that I can point to and be like, oh, this encaptured this character wonderfully, and there's just way too much. So I'm going to have to go back on yet another friggin' Batman example, but it was just one that I really loved from Justice League Unlimited. And it was, there's a scene in which there's a girl named Ace, and she's a telekinetic, but she's, like, very powerful. Like, telekinetic's probably really condensing her. It's like saying Rogue can fly. and she, Ace kind of goes off the radar, and she's like, or off the rails, and she's trying to, like, basically destroy everything. And, of course, Amanda Waller comes up to the Justice League, and she's like, all right, I got this thing that's going to totally kill this little girl, right? And Batman's like, I got this. Give me the thing. I'll go make sure she's taken care of. And it's just, it's this fantastic moment in the series, and I cried when I first saw it, because he comes over to Ace, and he seems to be the only person in the Justice League who remembered that this little girl is, like, 12. She's just a kid. And he comes up to her, and she's just talking about how she's like, I was always a government experiment, and they were always trying to turn me into a weapon, and blah, blah, blah. And she's like, and I had my childhood stolen from me. And he looks at her, and he says, yeah, I know what that's like. And her entire demeanor changes, and she looks at him, and she's like, you do, don't you? And they end up sitting together on the swing set, and she's talking about how she's like, you know, I'm psychic, I knew that you weren't going to kill me, and she's like, I'm just terrified to die. Will you sit here with me? And Batman sits and holds her hand as her powers slowly consume her and kill her. And so the episode ends with the rest of the Justice League is kind of cleaning up the mess from everything else. And they're just like, hey, we're not all dead. So clearly we took care of the Ace thing. And yay. And they're off kind of doing their own thing and busy. And at the end, it's just Batman with this dead girl in his arms. And I was like, wow, like, the reason that I liked it so much as a moment for his character is that, A, he stepped up to do this, because he knew that there was this horrible thing, right? But he also knew that it was just a scared little girl. Everybody else was, especially Hot Girl, was looking at her as just this weapon, right, that has to be stopped. And he's like, no, this is just a scared child. And it also, again, teams all together and they're all doing their things and Batman is off alone, as pretty much always.
Right.
But this idea that, you know, he would just sit there and hold this girl's hand, right? Just like, oh man, killing me, cutting onions. And that was, for some reason, I don't know why, but I was like, I remember watching it being like, of course he would do that.
Mm-hmm.
I just loved it. Oh, all sad now. That show was so fucking amazing.
The show was so good. God, it really was. Well, I have a Batman moment of my own.
Yay!
From Young Justice, once again. I think I even mentioned this to you when we were talking about this the other day, but it's in the first season, and the Justice League is having a meeting for who they're going to nominate to join the team. And, you know, like, they're talking about getting rid of Shazam because they just found out he's really 11-year-old Billy Batson. And, of course, he's like, I'm right here. I love that whole thing with anything that had Shazam in it. It was just wonderful. Because I didn't know he was really 11-year-old kid until I saw that episode. I'm like, oh, you know what? The first part of this show makes so much more sense now. but Batman puts his vote in for Robin. Mm-hmm. And Wonder Woman immediately cuts at him, and she's like, why? Why are you insisting we bring Robin in here so that he can be just like you? And he said, no, I'm doing everything in my power so that he's not like me. Which, you know, everyone got really silent.
Yeah, all of a sudden everyone's like, awkward.
Yeah, because there's another really, really deep moment between Batman and Robin, or I really should say Bruce and Dick. Because this is after Aqualad, he's been made leader of the team, and he really messes up on this mission. And Batman, he's like, I need to talk to you. And they all stand there, and he's like, Aqualad. And Robin's still there. He said, just Aqualad. And Robin looks crushed. and, you know, walks away. So basically Batman chews out Aqualad. Well, there's a scene back at Bruce, you know, Wayne Manor, where Dick is in the gym, like, doing all these, you know, basically doing acrobatic exercises. Mm-hmm. And the whole time he's going, just Aqualad, just Aqualad, to the point, like, he, like, you know, punches his hand through a wall. And Bruce, of course, is, it's really funny, because Bruce and Alfred are watching this from the Batcave while he still has Batman. It's like, dude, do you ever take that off? like, you're home, man. Like, and, you know, Alfred looks shocked, and Bruce looks shocked, and then Bruce comes, like, as Bruce into the gym, and he's like, hey, we need to talk. And Dick's like, what? What do you need to talk to me about? And he's like, I need to see how good your skills are, in the hoops. And he's like, what? And so he, like, throws him a basketball. He's like, do you think you could take me one-on-one? And just the, how it lit up Dick's face. Mm-hmm. Because, in, you know, many, they have such a different, interesting relationship they've always had through the comics. Yes. Because Dick had a family. He remembered his family very clearly. He was 9, I think. I don't remember. Maybe Bruce was 9 as well. I don't remember how old Bruce supposedly was. But, you know, he witnessed his family also dying in a very tragic way. And he gets taken in as Bruce's ward. And there's this thing where he wants Bruce to treat him like a son. And at the same time, it's like, you're not my dad.
Right.
So it's and Bruce kind of, like, you know, kind of teeters on that line where it goes back and forth between, I'm like a father to you, to I am your mentor, to I'm just your benefactor. So it's this really weird, you know, kind of dynamic that they've always had. And that right there to me was, like, really encapsulated that. Were how it really hurt Robin that Bruce didn't want to talk to him because he thought it was something different. Mm-hmm. He thought he was preferring somebody else over, you know, I'm living in your house and you're still choosing somebody else over me. But at the same time, when Bruce does try to reach out, his instant, you know, just like a teenager, his instant thing is like, what, man? You don't know me.
Right. Well, I think, yeah, they've always, that show especially, I think really, it really evaluated that complex relationship that those two have. Mm-hmm. I would argue that sometimes the comics in recent years have, like, really doubled down on that particular thing. But by and large, yeah, it's something that they, I think that show explored it better than really most any storyline that I can think of off the top of my head.
Oh, yeah, like, you want to go back to, you know, the Batman movies of the 90s? That didn't,
No.
Well, it didn't explore it at all, and it was because they made Dick Grayson be older, for starters. Made him be older, and you just can't have that kind of relationship with Val Kilmer. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, no.
not going to happen. Or George Clooney. It's just not going to happen. And I can't. And Batman the Animated Series, I think that did an okay job. Okay.
It did. But I think that show, they touched it a little bit, but they tended to want to shy away from that particular topic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
About just how complex that relationship was.
You know, actually, now I'm thinking about Teen Titans. Not Teen Titans Go, but Teen Titans actually had this really great moment.
Teen Titans did a good job, too.
Of this is one time that they really ever referenced where Robin came from. Mm-hmm. And it was, I think it was near the end of when Deathstroke was manipulating him, kind of forcing Robin to do his bidding and all that.
Yeah.
Or they didn't call him that. They called him Slade.
Slade.
And there's a moment where Slade said, I'm like a father to you. And Robin says, I already have a father. And bats fly overhead.
Yeah.
It was just very subtle, but made a really good point.
They did, yes. And I liked that they addressed that. He does think of that as his father.
But he fights it all the time. He goes back and forth. He's like, that's not my father. And it's an even interesting, more interesting dynamic now that Batman does have a son who lives there. Because he's constantly, you know, going. He feels like he has to compete against Dick. And Dick doesn't feel that way at all. He's like, we're not competing. Like, he just sees himself as a big brother. And, like, I think Damian made some point. He's like, well, do you think you're going to inherit Batman's cowl? He goes, well, if you remember, I was Batman, and you were my Robin. You know, just kind of putting that there. But he does his best to be like, no, we're like a brotherly relationship. But he has difficulty still dealing with Bruce. Like, really, the whole Bat family needs counseling. They all just need to sit down together.
Very badly.
And just kind of, and I don't even know if I want to, I don't think we need to include Barbara in on that. But, you know, just get Bruce, get Damian, get Dick at the very least. Maybe even Tim. I have no idea what's going on with him right now. Just kind of get them all into a room. Like, let's just talk. Like,
let's hug it out.
Can we please just share feelings a little bit? Which none of them will, because even though they all want to, they never do. Because every time Bruce reaches out, they all shy away. It's like after a death of the family, mm-hmm. Bruce actually tried to hold a dinner where they could all sit and talk, and they all, one by one, had other plans.
Yep. Which, I think that was a good moment for that. Because that entire arc kind of dealt with the fact that nobody really cares about him in that way.
About who?
Batman in general.
Oh.
He has all these people, and yet, you know, or Bruce, I guess I should say, rather than Batman, that, you know, he's kind of created this little island for himself.
Right, because he's shoving them away.
Yes.
For so much, to the point he's trying to bring them in. They don't want to deal with it on his terms.
Right. Exactly.
And, of course, the saddest thing about that was that each one of them did this individually, thinking that they'd be the only person who wasn't going to be there. Which is what really made it sadder, actually. And even more recently in the comics, you know, Batman made a comment to Dick. He said, you know, I don't mind, you know, funding your little projects. But he kind of, like, he makes the point of, like, I don't mind you doing this, but, you know, you do need to come home every once in a while. And that's, like, really his way of saying, a Batman way of saying, like, you should come by every once in a while.
Right.
You know,
come see me.
Yeah. Come hang out. Come see Damian.
Come visit. Yeah. So, talking about something that's not Batman, I know what you're thinking. Holy shit. I'm actually going to switch gears entirely and go to Marvel.
Mm.
Because I think the Marvel Cinematic Universe has done a really good job of what I always considered to be kind of like the core essence of Captain America. Right.
I could not agree more.
They've just done such a good job, and there was just this, there's a throwaway line, kind of, in The Winter Soldier that as soon as it happened, I was like, yes, I love everything about this scene. And it's the scene in which he is leaving the S.H.I.E.L.D. building, and he's in the elevator, and slowly but surely all these people start getting in the elevator. And being Cap and not being an idiot, right, he starts looking around and he realizes, oh, this is a lot of people for an elevator and all of these people are armed. And I love that once he kind of gets, you can see this look on his face like, well, shit, apparently this is happening. And he looks to everyone else and he says, if anyone wants to get off, before we do this, if anyone wants to get off, here's your stop. And I loved that he's like, okay, these guys are here to hurt me. These guys are definitely bad, but even still, he's like, if you want to get off right now, you know, we'll let bygones be bygones. And I thought, and I remember when it happened, when I first saw the movie in the theater, I was like, yes, that right there, that is Cap. Even with his life in danger, his first thought is, we don't have to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And that scene, I mean, it's such a small, minor thing, but it felt like such a good representation of him.
Absolutely. Actually, that was on yesterday on FX, and mm-hmm. it got to that scene, and Sean looked at me, he's like, this is my favorite scene. I was like, oh, when he says if anyone wants to get off, he's like, yeah, he said, because that was just brilliant. Like, he's still, he's ready, he's willing to let people go, even though he has every right to basically kick all their asses. It's like, but here's your chance.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm going to take you all on. Maybe you guys shouldn't let me bring my shield with me on the elevator. Just a thought, but
right.
Yeah.
Well, I think the thing I liked about it is that his voice, he has just kind of this, like, I'm going to let you all go, but there's definitely a threat in there, too.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like,
here's your chance to walk away in one piece.
Exactly.
As well as, you can go. A little bit of both.
A little bit of both. Like, I know what I'm going to have to do to get out of here, and, yeah. So I absolutely, that makes me so happy to hear that that's your husband's favorite scene in that. Because when we were watching the movie, I remember thinking just like, wow, I love that.
I have a couple of Cap as well.
Yay!
Mine are both from The Avengers.
Okay.
So there's a couple of moments there where it was, this is random things he said that was just like, that is just Cap right there. And I'm talking about stuff that Cap would have said in the 1940s, Cap. I mean, just, that is Cap. And the first one that really kind of hits home to me is when he first meets Bruce Banner.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, you know, he says, he greets him as Dr. Banner.
Right.
And he's like, you know, hi, I heard you're going to be here. And Cap says, I hear you can find the cube. And Banner says, is that all you've heard about me? And Cap says, that's all I care about.
Yes.
And it's like that just
I,
like,
love that.
Like, he didn't care what he had done in the past, what he can turn into. It was just like, you're an important person. We want you here. We hear that you can do this. Will you please do this? And that's all that I care about. I don't care about other things that you've done.
Well, I also took it as him, like,
making him feel welcome.
Yeah. Well, but also, like, helping him. Yes. Right? Like, okay, you got this. And when he's just like, oh, is that all you heard? That's all I need to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, don't think about that. Don't focus on that. Focus on finding us that cube.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Oh, I love that scene. Absolutely love it.
And I kind of like that because then later in the movie, when they're all arguing, you can barely hear it, but Bruce said, like, are you telling me that people are thinking Captain America is actually a threat? And because then Black Widow says, no, they monitor all of us. Like, she cuts him off there. But to me, that was him almost kind of thanking him for it. Like, you know,
right.
You did this for me. I'm defending you.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it may not be what it was, but that always stuck out to me. But the other big one, that this is 1940s Cap right here. And this is when Thor, you know, takes Loki and jumps off a plane. And,
yes,
you know, and Cap tells Iron Man, is like, we need a plan of attack. And Iron Man's like, I already have a plan. Attack. Flies off. And so Cap starts putting on a parachute. And Black Widow's like, you know, you might want to sit this one out, Cap. These guys are like gods. And he says, there's only one god, ma'am. And I'm pretty sure he doesn't dress like that.
Yes. Well, I like that. For me, that scene, he was like, it was very much him just being like, all right, we got this. Like, nothing, I mean, I don't want to say that nothing scares him, but like, you know, everything that came his way. Okay, we got to deal with this. We can deal with this. Mm-hmm. We can deal with this. Like, everything, right? Also, I mean, going back to that thing with Banner, right? We can deal with this.
Well, that, and also to me, you know, versus him versus Iron Man shows the amount of almost diplomacy he has as well, because he's like, mm-hmm. No, we need to sit here and plan, talk this out. And Tony's like, no, I'm just going to go beat him up. And even when Cap gets down there, he tells him, like, can we stop? Can we put down the weapons? And can we stop and can we talk about this?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of like, I'm going to jump in here and just beat you both up. He's like, no, let's just chat. Let's calm down. Let's chat.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought, I've been, and I know part of it is Chris Evans in general,
yeah.
But I have been tremendously impressed with what MCU has done with that character particularly.
Well, yeah, and it is Chris Evans. He is able to deliver it, and it helps. He looks like Captain America.
Mm-hmm.
helped that they grew his hair out, because before, you know, when I saw him before, it was always like really shaved really close. But he, I mean, he's got the blonde, blue-eyed, and he's got the look. The chiseled face.
Yes.
But it's also that writing team. Because it's not just one, it's a bunch of them, and they all were able to get together and really write out this character, like how he would be.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I
love
talent. People take this character that's been around for 70 plus years and write him like I've always been writing him.
Right? So, kind of along those lines, the final example that I have, and I can't really point to one example, because the show just did this so well across the board, with some glaring exceptions, which we just won't go there for now. But the old X-Men animated series from the 90s, that series managed to take, which was at that time about 30 years worth of just insane plot twists and storylines and character additions and character deaths, and they managed to take all of that, and they boiled it down into what I like to call the concentrated X-Men.
That's apt. Yeah.
Right? That they stripped down all this stuff, and they went back to, like, what is this character? And I don't just mean back. Like, they didn't just go, okay, what were these characters like in the 60s? Let's just go back to that, right? They managed to somehow say, okay, let's look at all of the stories that we have here, and then let's figure out what pieces make these characters. And yes, they were a little, what's the word I'm looking for? They were a little sanitized for a younger audience, since it was a Saturday morning cartoon, right? I mean, I can remember watching it in middle school. And it was... But somehow they managed to just create these really great versions of the characters that feel like that character. To this day, and maybe it's because that's where, like, I really got my hardcore exposure to the X-Men, but when I think about, like, the characters themselves, I find myself going back to X-Men episodes more than even issues.
I do too.
Yes, like, that's where you first fell in love with Rogue, isn't it?
Well, that's where I first even heard of the X-Men, to be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, so, you know, I see this cartoon, I'm like, oh my god, this is like, these are my people. Like, I'm just going to, you know, take all this in. And, you know, I'll admit 100%, I have a copy of it, but I have not read the Dark Phoenix saga. I have not read it. I do have a copy because I have, like, all the essential X-Men downstairs. So it's, like, you know, the original stuff all the way up through the 80s and 90s. But everything that I know about the Dark Phoenix saga, the series was spot on.
Yes.
They kept it right there with it.
I think what I liked about that, even that, they managed to cut off some of the chaff and just
trim,
you know,
the fat, like, there.
Yeah, exactly. Where they're just like, okay, start to finish, here's the damn story. Which is impressive. I mean, that series in general, like, I was trying to pick out one character, and sometimes they manage to boil it down a little too good to the essence where the characters are almost caricatures of themselves. So, like, I'm specifically thinking about Gambit here, where he has some episodes where I'm just like, oh my god. I mean, at some point, why isn't his dialogue just gumbo, gumbo, gumbo? Like, it's so... Sometimes it doesn't work as well as other in some episodes, but then other episodes, I'm just like, holy shit, why weren't you guys writing for the comics?
Yeah, see, actually, because I had this series down as one of mine, and it was specifically for Gambit.
Oh, okay.
And it's actually because there's, like, and you're right, you are 100% right, that there are some episodes where it is just like, buzzword, buzzword, buzzword. Something in, you know, Cajun French.
Right.
There is a lot of that, but the episode where he goes back to honor his pledge to the assassins and the teeths,
yes,
to be with his ex, to basically save his family, I'm back to do this. Like, that was probably the first time we really got to see more inside of him. The other time was when Bishop came and pointed him that he was going to be killing Senator Kelly. Mm-hmm. But so there was that, but there was also, there was this other episode when he actually, I don't remember exactly what they were doing, but the other X-Men were actually working with him, like more of a strategic plan for how to use his powers to do something. Like, you know, because usually they'll just take Gambit, do this, and they'll toss a card. Well, because mm-hmm. he needed a bigger explosion, Wolverine tossed him a chain. And he sits there and just swings the chain until it charges up. It takes a while, but he swings it, and, it, you know, the explosion makes it all worth it. And at that moment, he, like, you know, grabs his pole and then leans on it. He's like, don't get better than this. Right. And that is Gambit. Right there. And they've... And that's how he's been in the comics. Ever since, like, he has this really dark and touching side. Like, probably my favorite story arcs with him in the comics is when he loses his sight and Rogue has to help him see, and he both loves it and hates it at the same time, because he hates depending on her, but he loves depending on her. It's this fabulous arc, and how he comes to terms with that. But, you know, because you have that side again where he's super serious, and then you do have that gumbo, gumbo, gumbo side. But he's not as cheesy as they did it in the 90s. But just that one line is like, don't get better than this. That's Gambit.
It is. It's true. There, I mean, again, like, there were parts of that series where every single character, you're just like, yep, there you go. That's that character. And other parts, not so quite as successful. But, I absolutely loved that particular, I forgot about that episode for a while. I love that one, though. That series, I feel as though, and it's, so in the 90s, oh god, the 90s were just such a dark time for, like, a lot of stuff, but a lot of those comic book cartoons and stuff like that, and, like, when you go back and you look at the animated series, god, it is not pretty, and the voice work, oh boy, some of those actors were really phoning it in. But I specifically look at Scott, which is such a shame. Like, I'm wondering what the direction was there. Like, you are boring as fuck and nobody likes you. And the guy was like, got it.
I think so. I really do. And which makes me actually think of... So, Rob Paulson, I don't think he does it anymore, but he used to have this podcast, Talkin' Toons. And
best, like, podcast ever.
Yeah, I haven't heard it in a long time, so I don't think he's doing it anymore. But he did this one episode where it was the original Ninja Turtles all back together, and they were talking. And so they were talking about the fun that they had with their characters, and, you know, then the voice actor for Leonardo, he's like, well, I'm glad somebody had fun on the set. And everyone's laughing, and they said, what was your, then they're asking everybody, like, you know, what's your favorite line that you ever said, and they'd say it, and, or your favorite episode, and it was your favorite episode, and the guy who acted Leonardo said, I think it was the one where I said, we have to do something. And I see them doing that with Cyclops as well.
Right.
They made him a Leonardo.
Yeah, I would say that's pretty accurate.
And they did the same thing to him in the X-Men movies. Like, Bryan Singer obviously did not like Cyclops. I don't
think anybody likes Cyclops. I think it's the Great Secret.
I like him.
Well, that's because, you know, your opinions are wrong.
Okay.
I mean, just saying. Hmm. No, that one was always a little pain. His is probably the most painful thing, like, when you go back, because he's always sitting there like, Gene, we must go after Professor X. Like, it's so painful. And
his voice is
so bad.
His voice is better than hers.
Oh god.
Hands down.
Professor, we must go to the island. Whatever shall we do, Scott?
And Wolverine's is bad.
Wolverine's, it's pretty bad. It's not the worst, but it's pretty bad.
It's not the worst, but
oh man. And, like, the art is not good at all. The animation is not good. And the fashions are, oh god, so 90s. But,
that's from the a best story part.
I know, right? The giant shoulder pads and shit.
All the yellow spandex, all of it.
all of it, and you know that all of the leggings are stirrup pants.
You're right.
But, I mean, having said that, like, when I first went back to show it to my daughter, I was like, oh my god, this is so ugly. But I sat there watching it, and I just remember thinking, holy shit, this show was so beyond its time.
Oh yeah.
It was, oh man. And again, just, I sit there and I watch it, and I'm like, yep, this is the essence of this story, the essence of this character. I just, all the props to that end of that show. For, you know, doing its thing. Did you have any other examples you wanted to go through?
I had a couple, and one you'll just, I just need to say one thing and you'll agree with me, and that's the entire Deadpool movie. That's, I mean, Ryan Reynolds was born to play Deadpool, and that is exactly who Deadpool is. He did not ham it up. He did not exaggerate. That is Deadpool.
No, you know, from the opening crawl, when they talk about starring God's Perfect Idiot, I was like, oh man, we're in for a ride. And yes, let's talk about the Deadpool movie, because it wasn't just Deadpool they perfectly nailed. They nailed Colossus, too.
Oh, Colossus.
They really did, because he's just this gentle giant, right? He's this huge guy who's just like, we must be nice. And you know what? They also nailed him in the X-Men animated series, too.
For like the two episodes he was there, yeah.
Well, now credit where credit's due. But yeah, I mean, he's just this, we're going to be good. We're fantastic. And I think my favorite scene in that movie of him is when he's fighting Angel and
her boob pops out.
Her boob pops out and he's like, oh God, oh God. And he's like, he's like freaking out. You're very beautiful. It was so Colossus. He's like, oh.
He's like giving, he's like holding his, shielding his face, like giving her time to put herself back in. She's like, oh, you're so nice.
Thank you. But like in Colossus's mind, like, okay, the fight is clearly paused now.
Right.
Right. Like, I imagine at that point the Colossus would have been like, okay, we're done fighting now, right? That movie, it nailed him Deadpool goes without saying. I mean, start to fucking finish that whole character. I have to say, when we heard about the movie, they were like, somebody was like, oh man, there's a pegging scene in there. And I was like, oh, well, they're not going to do that to Ryan Reynolds. Like, and I remember thinking to myself, I was like, Deadpool would probably be down with that, but they're not going to do that to Ryan Reynolds. They totally did. I was like, oh my God. That's when I knew we were in good hands. And of course, you know, his constant breaking the fourth wall.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Obliterating it, as it were.
And drawing the pictures.
Yes. Oh my God. Just loved it. Have you seen this man?
Yes.
What? Just loved it.
Yeah. And the way he's talking about Wolverine and then even Hugh Jackman. I mean, that's, because that happens in the comics.
Oh yeah,
probably my god. You know, this wasn't a breaking the fourth wall moment. It was probably one of my favorite Deadpool moments, though. In Uncanny Avengers, is like he's talking about how much he hated Connecticut. He wanted to get out of Connecticut. This is awful. Why are we here? We hate this. And Rogue says, you know, when Logan was on the team, he wouldn't have been griping about Connecticut. And then Deadpool immediately says, well, then maybe he'd still be alive.
Yes, I did love that too.
I mean, just, when you sent me that. Yeah, just, you know. Yeah, and I had no idea what to expect with the movie, because I knew Deadpool, you know, was funny, broke the fourth wall and cussed a lot and all this stuff, blah, blah, blah. But I didn't think that they were going to nail it as well as they did.
Oh, yeah. I think I went in with high expectations, or high hopes, I should say, and nailed it.
Yeah, I wasn't prepared to be laughing at the opening credits.
Oh man. Yeah, I remember when the opening credits started.
Written
going,
by the real heroes of the story.
The only real heroes here. I remember when we were watching the credits, I remember my husband and I looked at each other and we were like, we're gonna be okay. It's not going to disappoint. We're going to be good.
Oh,
so gosh. What was your other one you had?
So Quicksilver from Age of Ultron. And because, you know, Quicksilver, he's a odd character in the comics in that he goes back and forth between, am I a bad guy? Am I a good guy? Or am I just a whiny little brat? You know, he goes back and you laugh, but it's true. He goes back and forth between those a lot. And in Age of Ultron, he goes from villain to hero, like pretty much as quickly as he does in the comics. We start off hating each other. Hey, we're best friends. You know, we got that shift. But one thing I really thought they nailed about Quicksilver was one, his devotion to his sister. Because that is almost, that is Quicksilver's downfall in the comics. You bring Scarlet Witch into this, you get her somehow in trouble. He stalks down and he goes to the dark side because he'll do anything to protect her. So there was that. But early on, when he hits Hawkeye, he says, "What, you didn't see that coming?" That's Quicksilver.
Right.
That's totally him to brush by something and then make some snide comments like, "What's wrong? Didn't you see this?" And then just keep on going.
Right. That, I liked his cockiness in there. Mostly because it made the end scene, his final scene, like a little bit more poignant.
Mm-hmm.
But yes.
God, especially since he says, "You didn't see that coming?" It just says he falls.
Yeah. That was cocky till the end.
Mm-hmm. But then that's Quicksilver. I mean, even the comics now, he's either super cocky or he's crying in a corner. I swear to God, the guy's bipolar. Like, there's like no in between with this guy. I mean, like during the whole Secret Empire, he made it very clear that he would join Cap's side if it meant saving his sister. And they're like, "Thanks, Quicksilver. Did you ever think that maybe we would try to save her in the end when this all comes down? Because she'd been possessed."
Mm-hmm.
You know, but no, he has to, you know, and he says repeatedly, "I'm only here for my sister." And at one point, Iron Man goes, "If you say you're here for your sister one more time, you can leave. Like, we get it." And, you know, then he tries, and in Uncanny Avengers, he tries to show off and ends up getting the girl he likes nearly killed.
Right.
Which then makes him go into, "I suck. Nobody wants me." And like, oh, dude, just no, like, when you're on, you're great. when you're whiny, like, no wonder Magneto doesn't even want to claim you as his son anymore. Okay, just come on.
I see why you were disowned. He's like, when you say it like that, it makes him sound like he's the Marvel version of Damien,
but not as evil.
Well, yeah,
and not as selfish. Not as selfish.
Well. You can't help it, though. I mean, look at his parents.
I don't think Quicksilver ever would have stopped somebody's heart to prove a point.
I mean, I'm just saying. Like, Damien never had a chance.
Damien didn't have a chance. Especially with who his grandfather was. There's not... Yeah, he's... Yeah.
Well, yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, so... This week, oh my god, I feel like I read a ton of comics, and then I look at your list versus my list, and I'm like, do I even read?
Okay, well, maybe you shouldn't look at my list, because, but it also depends on week to week. I mean, there's been one week where I've gotten, like, one comic, and then another week, like, last week I only got three, and then today I got five, so it's just, like, I never know what I'm going to get, and my comics are canceling.
Oh, that's true. You do have that.
Like, Luke Cage just ended, and I tell you what, they ended that fantastically.
Did they?
Yeah, because the story ended, and the last issue is where he goes home, and, you know, he tells Jessica he's sorry, and that he's home, this is where he's going to be, and his daughter asks him to tell her a story. So he starts to tell her, like, this, you know, fairy tale story. He's like, "Once upon a time, there was this beautiful princess." I don't forget her name. She's like, "I'm not a princess." And he's like, "What do you mean?" She said, "I gotta send you this." She said, "Princesses are dumb girls who think they need to be saved by a man." And he's like, "He goes, did your mom teach you that?" And she goes, "Yes." And he's like, "What else did your mom teach you?" She also taught me, like, says a string of cuss words. He's like, okay, let's not get into that. But it ends up that she keeps taking over the story because she's like, you're telling it wrong. And she ends up telling this wonderful, beautiful story about how that daddy's always gone and fighting other things, and mommy's there to protect her, but she can protect herself. And it kind of ends with like this big old happy family, and Jessica Jones is out in the hallway, like, listening, and she's, like, tearing up and crying.
Uh-oh. And wait. I think your mic cut out.
Oh, no.
Can you hear me? We're having, like, all kinds of mic problems tonight.
Like, are you hearing me now?
Yep. Your mic is out. So.
That's weird. Because it's picking up. It's recording.
I haven't actually read Luke Cage. You've gotten me intrigued about it. And you have me intrigued about it. And I guess, I don't know, maybe I like the idea that it's ended now. Because then I can go and binge it. The idea of having to, like, keep up with the series week to week kind of has me a little, I don't know, I think because of everything I've been having.
Although I can't remember when I started into it.
So,
All right, guys, so we're having some technical difficulties. The mic on my end is showing that I am picking up, but Jen cannot hear me. So,
Can't hear you.
So
this has been night of the technical difficulties this evening.
Yeah, so so this is all right. So I think we're going to have to end today. I'm typing her because she can't hear me. Sorry, I'm sorry. Telling her that it's picking, you know, that we're going to have to end it because it's picking up on my end and not on hers. So, oh wow, it was amazing. I just typed in exactly what I was saying. That's funny. Okay, so I think we're going to put this on hold for now. And we can talk about, because I mean, I've read a lot. I may try to do like a pickup another time for what I'm going to do. So, we're going to cut this off, but we got our good topic in. So at least we have that. And so I guess with that, I'm going to say good night and good luck to everybody. So sorry about this. We hope to have this better next time. Bye.